welcome to our AA meeting on air, 104.6 Planet FM. My name is Harriet. I'm an alcoholic, and I'll be chairing our meeting this morning. Please welcome our speakers today, Danny, Liz, and Judith. They will be sharing their experience, strength, and hope with you all. Would you all like to help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
This is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Our first speaker, Danny, would you care to share, please?
Thanks, Harriet. Hello, family. My name is Danny, and I am an alcoholic. It's good to be here today. Experience, strength, and hope. So I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. I've learned a few things in Alcoholics Anonymous and Paradox to my life as a young boy, why I did the things I did, why I felt the way I felt. I was always getting into trouble. People would always say, "Behave yourself, Danny, behave yourself." You know, I can remember at a very, very early age being restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, this is before I even found alcohol. I used to chew Blue Tacks, sniff Vivids, rock on my chairs at school. I would smash windows, jump through the smashed windows, get told that it's not good, don't do it again, continue to keep doing it over and over again, rocking on my chairs, lighting fires, jumping through the fires, all sorts of stuff, you know. Don't touch the electric fence, touch the electric fence, time and time and time again, you know. I was always told that I'm bad, you're a bad boy, you know. You're going to be in the bad classroom with all the other bad kids. What I know now today is that all the other kids were just as restless, irritable, and discontent as I was. I found alcohol in my early teens, and it gave me wings, liquid courage. It gave me wings until it had me in chains. My life was governed by alcohol. I was either drinking it, thinking about drinking it, recovering from it, promising I'm never going to ever do it again, and find myself continuing to do it. It was my best friend and my worst enemy. It governed my life. It ruled my life. Everything, I got into trouble because of it. I lost my license because of it. I was appearing in court because of it. I was getting into relationships because of it. I was going to absurd places to find it because of it. It just absolutely governed my life. And it still somewhat does govern my life today. I don't drink anymore. I am an alcoholic, and I'm affected by alcoholism, so hence why I do what I need to do to stay away from the alcohol. So it does still govern me, in a way. You know, tradition three, if you're not familiar with the traditions, is the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So I am grateful for the drink because it's my requirement. You know, I got sent to jail. I got sent to jail in 2014. I was too ill for school. I was too berserk to work, and I was too sick for corrections. The judge said to me, "Look, mate, your whole criminal history is to do with alcohol and drugs." And I was like, "Well, I didn't know. I was lost, you know, absolutely hopeless, you know." And he said, "You can either go to jail, do what you need to do in there, or there is a rehab for you that the lawyer and your parents have organized." And, you know, thank God for my parents are willing to pay for that rehab. And I said, "Nah, you know, I thought I was macho." I was like, "Nah, I'll just do my leg, rah, 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 as you do." Two days into my sentence, a counselor came down and saw me. I was somewhat sober then, and she just said to me, "I'd like to remind you, you got a daughter. I broke down into tears and I said I needed help. And that's where my journey began. So I've been rescued by surrendering. That's the, you know, the first and foremost is that acceptance, that honesty and acceptance, you know. I come from a world of no surrender, you know, no retreat. I used to wear all my defects of character like a badge of honor, you know, clocking up DICs just because my mates were getting DICs. I'd go out and get another one. All that sort of bravado. What I know now is it's justify, rationalize, and defend. I was justifying, rationalizing, and defending my behavior because I was stuck, scared, and lost, you know. And I couldn't... I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. When I say that, I mean I couldn't seem to be of any use. I was prey to misery and depression. My close companions were the four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. It talks about all of this in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So I got into the rehab and started on my journey. That was in 2014. Unfortunately or fortunately, I haven't managed to stay stopped for that whole time. You know, sobriety had lost its priority and I have had my slips. You know, I've had 7 years of continuous sobriety and then I thought I'm not alcoholic anymore. Cunning, baffling and powerful, the thought came back that one drink would be okay. Well, I know now that one drink's too many and 1,000 is never enough. You know, so sobriety has lost its priority for me in the past. I am here before you today sober though, and Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. Doing the steps, working the steps, living the steps has changed my life and it continues to change my life. I have a sponsor who I'm actively in contact with and I do stay hot, honest, open and transparent with people in recovery. I have good solid men in my life. I have good solid females in my life. That call me on my shit. You know, I need to be cool on my stuff. And if I'm not growing within, I'm going to be growing without. You know, I love the literature. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the big book. I'm sober today by God's grace. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as it is outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the experience, strength, and hope from my friends and fellows in Alcoholics Anonymous. My life has changed. My life has changed. I do not drink anymore. I do not drug anymore. I do not sell drugs anymore. I do not steal anymore. I am no longer a slave. I'm no longer a slave. Freedom from and freedom to. You know, I have a small life today. Less is more in my life today. I've got a beautiful 18-year-old daughter. Alcohol meant more to me than she did. As an active alcoholic, I know that I suffer from a disease. It's a sickness. I'm not a bad person. I'm a sick person. I've got God in my life. You know, I've succumbed to the fact that I need a higher power in my life who governs me. I wake up every morning and I ask God to show me how I separate myself from you, God. Have me be what you would have me be. I don't ask for much. Life is good today. As long as I stay away from alcohol, I'm going to be okay. My primary purpose is the first and foremost thing in my life. I don't want to let the life AA gave me get in the way of my AA life. Thanks for asking me to share.
Wonderful. Thank you, Danny. Liz, would you care to share, please?
Hi, I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic. I grew up in an alcoholic household. I started drinking when I was 10. And I got sober when I was 31. I've been sober since 2014, so coming up 12 years. When I was young in my alcoholic household, and just in my daily life, I was that really awkward, anxious child that didn't really feel like they fitted in anywhere. I was really badly bullied at school. I was bullied at home. And like something didn't feel right in me. Like I was never at ease in myself, and I was always trying to do things to make other people happy and to be accepted. And then when I started drinking with my dad when I was 10, you know, I'd just have like a beer a night or something at the beginning, and I found that I didn't care anymore. It's not like I felt like I suddenly fitted in. I just stopped caring about fitting in so much, and I felt some of that anxiety kind of go away. And I had no role model that showed me that this wasn't normal. So yeah, started drinking when I was 10, and then it ramped up from there. I, you know, became a daily drinker as a teenager, you know, taking the drink bottles to school with the rocket fuel, and then got into drugs. But I'm a really controlling person, and so drugs were only useful for me when they meant I could drink more. And so I am purely an alcoholic, and my recovery is only through AA. But, you know, drugs were part of the story, only in the fact that, you know, I could stay awake a bit longer and didn't pass out as easily. And, you know, my drinking just progressed over time, but I thought my dad was like the superhero functioning alcoholic that didn't take anything from anyone, like, and that's who I wanted to be. So like, I had this role model in my life who was a daily heavy drinker, who was a violent man, and that's what I wanted to become. I thought that's what I should strive for, and that's how I went about my life. So, but I was still managing to do things. So I graduated from high school, I went to university, I got 2 degrees. But slowly over time, I was just going more and more insane, and I was starting to lose more and more friends and ruin more and more relationships. And so the impact for me was, you know, I was doing things and I was behaving in ways that I would just kind of go into that shame spiral. I'd wake up full of fear and shame and remorse and guilt, and just be so disgusted with myself, what I'd done the night before. You know, I couldn't show up. I'd go for weeks at a time just hiding in my room and not going to university. But I thought it was normal, and I just needed to toughen up and be able to handle my drinking a bit more. And I thought, like, I just wanted to be really rock and roll. And so I kept drinking, and then I just kept moving. I came back to Auckland, and then I moved overseas, and then I moved overseas again. But my problems always followed me. As soon as my drinking ramped up again, I'd often try the controlled drinking. Okay, I'm just not going to drink for a week. I'm just not going to drink on weeknights. I'm going to have 2 alcohol-free days a week. I'm not going to drink dark spirits anymore. Like, I tried all of these things because I was so unwilling to think that alcohol was the problem in my life. You know, but eventually, as I got like into my 20s, my mental health really took a turn. And I became extremely suicidal, and had to, you know, my sobriety came through psych wards. I had 3 different psych ward stays. I tried to kill myself in the psych wards. And finally, I found some doctors that were like, you have an alcohol dependency. And I went to an AA meeting, and at first I hated it. I was like, I don't want to do the God thing. These people are weird. Like, I just need to fix everything else in my life, and then the alcohol will come into control. Like, it's not the alcohol that's the problem. It's because my dad's mean to me, or my husband doesn't love me enough, or my job is too demanding. Once I have all that sorted, then the alcohol is going to come into play. I didn't realize that it was my alcoholism that was getting in the way of me being able to live the rest of my life. And that was a really hard thing for me to accept, because alcohol had become my best friend. So finally, after my third psych ward stay, I had the gift of desperation. Some nice older sober woman took me under their wing, and they kind of explained to me how alcoholism really works, which is, it is a mental disease, and my brain was not able to function correctly when I was continuing to put the poison of alcohol in my body, because I was having an allergic reaction due to my addiction. And so for me, I stopped drinking, I put the drink down, and I thought my life was magically going to get better. It didn't, because I didn't have any of the coping mechanisms. You know, I started drinking when I was so young that I never developed any kind of appropriate coping mechanisms that an adult needs to live their daily life. And so through AA, through doing the steps and having a sponsor, working with other women, having a home group, I learned how to be a functioning adult. You know, I learned how to have responsibility and show up for people and take accountability for my actions. You know, I came into AA thinking I was this victim and everything just happened to me. And then I got sober and I listened to these people and I did the work, and I realized that I had played a part in all of these things that had happened to my life, and I could make my life better if I did the suggested things. And getting sober wasn't easy for me. You know, I'm very self-reliant and stubborn, and you know, it is, for me, it was hard work getting sober, but I know without a doubt that if I didn't get sober, I would be dead now. Like, without AA, I wouldn't be here. And so through AA, through working with other women, sponsoring other women, I have this life now that's beyond my wildest dreams. You know, when I was young, my dad used to say that he'd be shocked if I managed to work in a supermarket. I now have this amazing career. I have an amazing husband. I have all of these friends in the fellowship and out of the fellowship. I can be like a useful member of society that I never thought was going to be my life. You know, and it's just all of these gifts of recovery have come to me because I've done the suggested things in AA, and I don't do them perfectly all the time, but that's not realistic. You don't need to. I just have to keep showing up one day at a time, and it's worked for me. You know, sometimes I don't want to do it. I don't want to always go to an AA meeting, but when I come out of it, I always feel so much better. And so, yeah, I'm a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful that I have, you know, other people in the fellowship to keep me in line as well. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Liz. Judith, would you like to share?
Thank you. My name is Judith. I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't know that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I found that out in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not have that story of, I tried to stop drinking that I do here in the rooms. I came from a household I called my father as a child a rageaholic. And I did not want to be like him. And as I got older, I found myself being exactly like him. So I tried all sorts of therapy. I always knew there was something wrong with me. I was very nihilistic. I tried to commit suicide as a teenager. I didn't think, you know, everyone had a plan when they left high school. I was like, what's the point of having a plan? I'm going to be dead soon. You know, I was that kid. And I never thought I would make it to 30. So I just kind of bumbled along. I was the academically smart kid. So, yeah, I kind of lost myself in books, and I was good at study. So, yeah, I did that. But I didn't feel like I had that manual of how to live life. And I hear that in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous too. I feel like everyone else got a manual of how to be a person or how to be a grown-up and I didn't feel like I got any of that. And then I blame my family, and then, yeah, did years of therapy. And I don't dish therapy because it kept me alive. I made a lot of contracts with therapists just for, you know, I'm not going to kill myself right now. And, and that kind of kept me alive. But I also threw myself into work, and I built a very successful business that I started at 26. And so I had workaholism in my life as well. It was all about work, and it was all about having enough money and proving to myself that I was someone. But I had screaming arguments with my partner who, you know, was just like my parents, the way that I didn't want to be, and I was just like that. And so I knew alcohol was my coping mechanism, and I was like, well, that's cool, because other people do strange things like get up early and go to the gym. That's just not me. I'm the person that stays up late and drinks, and of course I do, because I'm up late working. I knew it was my coping mechanism, and I was fine with that, you know. But it was really the way that I was behaving in my home, that got me looking at myself. I was like, I don't want to be this a-hole. And so therapy, more therapy, and then I thought if I quit my very demanding, stressful job, then I won't be so, you know, this business, I won't be so stressed, and therefore I won't, I didn't really put it to alcohol, I just won't behave so badly. And So sold this business, moved out of the city, took up Buddhist meditation because that was going to fix me. I was trying to fix me, right? Buddhist meditation is going to fix me, but didn't stop drinking. It's real hard to meditate every morning when you've still got a hangover. And, and then it was, I didn't really think having a child would fix me, but I did have a child and I didn't drink when I was pregnant. So, you know, I can't be an alcoholic. That was something that was hard for me to get my head around. I can't be an alcoholic because I could give up drinking when I was pregnant. But the booze crept back in and the unmanageability crept back in. And when that child was 9, I was back to kind of being suicidal again, like not actively, I've got a plan, but if a bus took me out, I wouldn't care either. And it was that rat wheel of someone talked to me about some friends they knew didn't drink from Tuesday to Thursday, and I was like, oh, that would probably help, because I had another job by this point, a day job, and but there was always a reason to have a drink. Maybe not on Tuesday or Wednesday, but Thursday or the next week it would be, you know, Tuesday. And eventually that led me to taking myself to CADS, Community Alcohol and Drug Services, and trying to, I never wanted to give up drinking, but I thought I'd maybe try and get a handle on it, rein it in, wouldn't feel so hungover, wouldn't feel, the hangovers were getting really bad, and I thought I'd just feel a bit better if I could rein it in. Well, going through the CADS program, I quickly realised that I could not follow their guidelines about how many standard drinks you're supposed to have on one occasion, how many alcohol-free days you were supposed to have, like normal drinking or social drinking, I think they call it. I was just like, I don't drink like that. When I drink hard, I drink fast. I don't stick to the number of drinks I said I was going to have. I thought I changed my mind. You know, I finished all the wine in the fridge, and then I'm getting up on the chair to get that so-called good wine that I replaced last week after saying I'm not going to drink the so-called good wine again. Anyway, I dragged my own sorry butt to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there I got to understand that I was an alcoholic because I heard people talking about how they felt and that rat wheel and that compulsion, and that I was looking for the perfect number of drinks that I could be. I wanted to be drunk, but I didn't want to be embarrassing, and I was being embarrassing. And then I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it's the first drink that got you drunk, and that kind of blew my mind. Like, if I stay away from the first drink, that I can't get drunk. And one day at a time, like, I don't have to do, I don't have to do something that would horrify me if I had to do it for the rest of my life, like just break it down to today. Can I stay away from a drink today? And and I just kept coming. That was the only thing that I did. I just kept coming to meetings, and I got some relief kind of from my head. And I have just kept coming. My sobriety, I'll be 11 years sober in July if I keep coming and keep doing the things. But I do also want to say it hasn't been like a magic fix. Like, I don't feel, I think it would be worse if I was drinking, put it that way, but I don't feel that I've got a life beyond my wildest dreams. I don't relate to that at the moment. Mental health has been up and down. At the moment, it's a bit down. It would be worse with a drink. But I also have tools that sometimes I pick up and use really easily, and sometimes I'm really on the, they call it the spiritual beam, and other times I've fallen off and I'm face down on the frickin' gym mat, and that's kind of okay. I think if I keep showing up, it'd be worse if I left, and again, you know, I still have a daughter, it'd be worse if I died. And so while the joy is not present right at the moment, I still think that I'm in the right place for me, and I have people that I can talk to, and I can get the madness out of my head, and I have a sponsor who gives amazing amount of time to me, and I have a home group, a group that I go to every week that see me good or bad or in the middle. And a God of my own understanding who I believe is out there, and I asked for a sign about a week ago and I got it as hard and as fast as you could expect. I will keep coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Judith. Hey, that's all we have time for today. Thank you again to Danny, Liz and Judith for joining us into the studio and for all of you listening. We're on air each Sunday, 10:45 a.m. on Planet FM 104.6. If you or anyone you know is in need of help from AA, please either call on 0800 AA Works, 0800 229 6757, or visit the AA website, www.aa.org.nz. There you can find a lot of information, meetings, and some of our literature. Finally, you can find today's recording and others on the Planet FM website, www.planetaudio.org.nz, under the program name AA On Air. Finally, can you all join me now in closing this meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Community access, radio every way you want it, on planetaudio.org.nz.
Auckland Council has a goal of zero waste to landfill by 2040. That means recycling, composting, reusing and repurposing materials. Here's another zero waste tip on Planet FM. Batteries and electronics should never be disposed of in your curbside bins. Batteries can be taken to many Bunnings and Mitre 10s, and community recycling centres offer occasional free e-waste collection days. Check the council website for more information on how to safely dispose of these items and other hazardous materials. A total of 147,000 tonnes was saved from landfill services in 2024. Find out all the info at wastenothing.co.nz.
Senior Focus is a reflective radio program designed for those 50 plus, where you can listen to a wealth of knowledge and expertise and insights coming from within our senior community. Our range of topics and guests stretching from the personal to the professional, from advocates to inventors and heritage buffs, will offer unique perspectives. Our Senior Focus program is on at 5:25 p.m. on Sundays. Or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus.
planetaudio.org.nz, your platform for community connection, from podcasts to radio shows. We give you Auckland and worldwide access to create shows that connect you with your community. With brand new studios and expert support, we make it easy for you to create meaningful, professional broadcasts. Share your culture, tell your story, or spark conversation. Your voice matters. 104.6 Planet FM.
This is 104.6 Planet FM. Join AA Meeting On Air next Sunday morning at 10:45. And if you'd like to listen to this program again, go to our website, planetaudio.org.nz/AA Meeting On Air. All one word.
So good, and I wouldn't